Hi and welcome back. This is episode number 306. Today I am talking to Walter Robin Goh. He is a partner at Fortin, Navassa and Salazar. They are a law firm based in Central Makati in the Philippines. I got Walter on the show to discuss data privacy and data security. It is a common concern with people that are looking to outsource or outsourcing to the Philippines. Is the Philippines safe with my data and the processes around that? Can I trust people with my operations and data? Now, this conversation doesn't wholly cover every aspect of IP, data security, and things like that, but we dive very deep into data security as per the law and the framework here in the Philippines. It's a really interesting conversation. It is a slightly technical conversation, but I certainly learned a lot from Walter. So I encourage you to have a listen if you are in any way concerned about your data when you are offshoring or outsourcing. If you want any of the show notes to this, as always, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. So it's great to be joined by Walter to explore data privacy in the Philippines from both a legal perspective and also more of a pragmatic perspective as well. And, you know, also, of course, we are faced with unusual times with COVID, and we're going to get updates on how that has affected privacy, data privacy, the processes, and also the obligations to data privacy. So welcome to the show, Walter.
Hi, Derek. Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me to talk on your podcast.
Absolute pleasure.
Yeah. We are living in interesting times. Data privacy, of course, being the center of attention in quite a few of the newsworthy articles we've seen over the course of the past 6 months here in the Philippines.
Absolutely. I think it's consuming the world, isn't it? And changing all of our work practices. And, you know, one of the big changes, of course, to the work practices is work from home. And that is one of the major concerns in terms of whether data security, data privacy can actually be effectively transferred from the workplace where you can secure an environment and secure practices. Transfer it over to the home environment where there's, you know, relatively a lot less control. So it's fantastic to have you on the show to discuss and explore this. I suppose, Walter, first of all, just give us a brief introduction as to who you are and the firm you work for.
Okay. I'm Walter Goh, junior partner at Fortuna Navassa and Salazar Law Offices. We are a full-service law firm based in Makati City. Our fields of practice go from civil criminal litigation, labor practice, commercial law, corporate law, mining, and data privacy as well. So we basically run the whole gamut of legal practice in the Philippines.
Fantastic. It's good to have a generalist firm. And Walter, so let's get into data privacy. You know, it's a big wide world out there, and I think, like, obviously never before, we are all now trading and working within a global environment. And, you know, it doesn't really matter necessarily what your country's laws are so much, because everything is so globalized. And I think one of the big concerns with people when they go offshore is, you know, how is my data safe and secure? I suppose, you know, in opening, do you want to just paint a picture of the data privacy situation in the Philippines, and is there even you know, data privacy practices and laws in place?
Yes. Okay. We enacted the Data Privacy Act in the Philippines in 2012. So this was based actually on GDPR. So we've adopted that as more or less the basis for which the Data Privacy Act and the standards by which the Data Privacy Act is supposed to operate. Notwithstanding that it was enacted in 2012, it was only in 2016 when the implementing rules and regulations were finally enacted, and the National Privacy Commission, which was created by the law, was formally put into place. So it really wasn't until just a few years ago, 2016, when data privacy came into the minds of the Filipino people, insofar as it's creating legal obligations and possible penalties for violations of breach of data privacy. Before that, we actually had quite a few instances where we encountered serious data breaches, including breach of voters' lists of the COMELEC, Commission on Elections. So it's quite timely as well that the Data Privacy Act was finally enacted and is now being implemented by the government. Given the current situation with COVID, I think it is rather crucial that we already had this in place 4 years ago, so that the data privacy policies and practices of local businesses would at least no longer be in their infancy, and quite a lot of the local firms would have practices and policies in place which are meant to comply with the Data Privacy Act.
And the Data Privacy Act, what does it mean in practical application? Is it something where, you know, it provides recourse if there are breaches, or is it a guideline in terms of, you know, what you should do as a business owner or an employee and things like that?
Okay. When we take a look at the Data Privacy Act, one thing that I like one way that I like to approach it is to take a look at the four W's, the who, what, where, when, and the why. The who, the Data Privacy Act is mainly geared towards what it refers to as personal information controllers and personal information processors. So these are the entities who collect the data. Practically all businesses would be covered by this. If you have an HR department that collects the data of your employees, you would already fall under this category. You are already collecting personal data. So insofar as the who is concerned, it's almost everyone. Almost every entity that runs a business would find some form of application of the Data Privacy Act towards it. The what would be the personal information and sensitive personal information, again, as defined in the law. So these are the information which would tend to lead towards the identification of a certain person. So the birthday of a person, for instance, would fall under personal information. Sensitive personal information, these would refer to social security numbers, passport numbers, driver's license numbers, religion, political views. So these are the sensitive personal information, which likewise is deemed protected by the law. Where? So our Data Privacy Act has international application insofar as where the data is collected locally and shared international to a third country. It would still be covered by the Data Privacy Act. And the why of the Data Privacy Act, which is the essence really for its enactment, is to ensure that the personal information and sensitive personal information of the data subjects is duly protected and not misused or abused by the PICs, the controllers in this case. So, yeah, I think that's how I would describe the Data Privacy Act and its application.
And in terms of the what, in terms of what is being protected, it seems largely focused on the individuals and protecting individuals' information. Does the Data Privacy Act or sort of laws more generally seek to protect confidential IP or, you know, other forms of data, you know, commercial sensitive items, or is that not covered by the this act?
Okay, the Data Privacy Act specifically lists personal information and sensitive personal information. Insofar as corporate proprietary information, we also have the Intellectual Property Code, which protects, say, copyrights, trademarks, patents. These are duly protected by the Intellectual Property Code of the Philippines as well. So we do have laws in place that would protect even proprietary corporate information.
And in terms of international jurisdiction, for an absolute beginner, can you sort of, I suppose, paint a picture in terms of how the laws cross over? If a client is being served by a Philippine BPO here in the Philippines, and there is a breach, where is the jurisdiction and where is the recourse?
Okay, our data privacy law would primarily govern over data that is collected in the Philippines by a domestic entity. Okay. There are, of course, situations where the data collected domestically would be shared overseas and vice versa. Okay. Insofar as the liabilities of the parties concerned, so you have the, let's start first with the situation where the data is collected locally in the Philippines. Okay. Where the data is collected locally by a domestic entity and it is subsequently shared to a third party overseas, the primary responsibility to secure the data that is collected belongs to the domestic entity, the one that is collecting the data, the data. And when there is a breach overseas, there is a duty generally on the part of that third party overseas to notify the personal information controller based in the Philippines. And the PIC based in the Philippines would in turn have a duty to notify the National Privacy Commission, which is the government agency tasked with implementing the Data Privacy Act. And the PIC, the local entity, would be primarily responsible, primarily liable, notwithstanding the breach occurred outside the territorial jurisdiction of the Philippines. Insofar as the reverse, where a third person processor based in the Philippines receives the data from an overseas entity that was primarily the one who caused the collection of the data, we would likewise have the duty in the event of a breach to notify the appropriate government agencies as well as the principal in this case, the one who collected the data overseas. So it works both ways, and the law would require that the entities be put to task for the breach.
Commercially, the industry is maybe more aware of compliance protocols, maybe things such as PCI compliance, which is if you're handling card details of people. There's HIPAA compliance for any sort of US healthcare information. How do these, I suppose, independent compliance protocols impact or work alongside the data privacy?
Okay. Where you have a situation that there's a transfer of the data from one entity to the other, generally what the Data Privacy Act requires is that a data sharing agreement between the two entities be executed. And our advice would be that these data sharing agreements have to embody the requirements of both local and the foreign law insofar as securing the data. So if there are special requirements insofar as specific types of data being gathered, you mentioned health data in the US or credit card details, bank details in other jurisdictions. When we prepare the data sharing agreements, and again, this is based on prudence already, we would require that any data privacy requirements under their territorial jurisdiction have to be embodied in the data sharing agreements, so that when the local entity receives this data, even if there's no specific provision under our laws, the personal information processor, the recipient of the data, would still be contractually bound, at the very least, to comply with, if there are stricter requirements in the laws overseas, these stricter requirements. So that's a matter of prudence that we generally advise our clients that they have to put in their agreements.
From what I understand of the Data Privacy Act, there's a lot of practical instruction, or maybe more forcefully, a lot of practical obligation of anyone that comes in contact with data and processes that they have to follow. Can you give us a quick rundown of, I suppose, common practices and expectations when managing data, and also if there is a breach?
Okay. Insofar as the practical aspect is concerned, when, for instance, we are engaged to do a data privacy engagement for a client, the first step that you would do is a privacy impact assessment. The privacy impact assessment, it's really a examination of the process flow, the business processes that the client already has in place. So this is purely practical. This is not yet a legal approach to data privacy. It's a matter of taking a look at data streams from the time that the data is collected by the client to how it is stored, how it is used, who has access to it, how do you access it, until eventually you would have to dispose of it as required under the law. I think a universal example that we can use that would cross various industries would be HR, since all companies would have their HR departments. Under the data stream for HR, you would have first the applicant submitting their resume, their CVs, which would already contain various items that would fall under personal information or sensitive personal information as defined under the Data Privacy Act. So this is received, whether there's a centralized receiving or in some instances here in the Philippines, what is done is you have a friend that works for a certain company, you hand your resume over to your friend, and that friend would then be the one to forward it to HR. Then HR, of course, would have to do something with all these resumes that it receives day in, day out, year on year. Okay. So how do you secure these documents? How do you secure these resumes that you receive, whether it's physical papers, whether it's through email? How do you secure this? So we take a look at that. The second thing would be, who has access to this? Is it only HR? Are other departments able to take a look at these papers? And if you go by best practices for data privacy, ideally you wouldn't have someone from finance, for example, able to go over to a desk and just sort through all of these resumes that are being filed and be able to peek at all the data, copy all the data that is contained there. From HR, it's brought somewhere else. Maybe they apply to a certain department, so you send it over to that whoever is in charge of that department, whether it's a high level or low level employee, depending on how the company works, for preliminary vetting. Then you call that person in for an interview, you do the interview, you hire or you choose not to hire based on the interview, and then it's forwarded further down back to HR for further processing, or it's set aside. So that process flow, if you'll notice, there's nothing legal about it. It's purely practical, in the sense of how you handle one particular piece of paper that happens to contain a lot of personal information that is protected by law. The Data Privacy Act has three guiding principles. I think this is something that is not exclusive to the Philippine Data Privacy Act. So the guiding principles are transparency, legitimate purpose, and proportionality. So transparency in this situation would be, what's the reason for collecting the data? So I am gathering all this data, you are giving it to me voluntarily, or I am soliciting this from you for the purpose of hiring you. So when I do that, information which is not necessary for me to know, for me to eventually hire you, need not be submitted to me, need not be made known to me. What would be relevant then? Educational and work experience would be the first two that come to mind. Other information that may be relevant, although less so than educational information and past work experience, would be probably age. If this person is close to retiring already, would he be someone that you'd be willing to still take on for a particular role? The address is also a concern, for depending on the role, if it's going to be an accessible work site for this person who lives maybe on the other side of Metro Manila, and you're expecting someone to report from the north or the south of Metro Manila, and you have a preference of hiring someone that's already in the area. So, but definitely other items such as religion, for example, or what else are usually put in by applicants? Religion is something that comes to mind. For some reason, a lot of applicants here in the Philippines still put their religion in their resume. It's not necessary for human resources to know insofar as hiring is concerned. So insofar, when you look at that information, that's not necessary. So that's not something that if you as a company like to keep a record of all your applicants, that's something that you don't need to keep anymore, even if it's submitted to you. Legitimate purpose, of course, you have the legitimate purpose of hire. You have to collect this data in order for you to form a basis upon which you're going to hire someone. And proportionality, again, taken together with the first two, you only collect what you need to collect.
And I mean, there seems a huge opportunity for data leakage and mistreatment, I suppose, you know, just in the normal management of documents or mismanagement, right, or apathy. Does it leave every normal business completely wide open to you know, data breaches? And you know, do you get the feeling that the law is there to be I suppose this is the law reasonable in terms of its structure?
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
In terms of its structure, yes, it is quite reasonable. I think what it does more so than provide a penal aspect to data privacy handling and collection is that if someone is familiar with its provisions, or once it is made more, once we incorporate it more into our daily routines, things that we would ordinarily think of as innocent matters, you suddenly realize that there are repercussions insofar as data privacy is concerned. And it's quite important, since I would say still a majority of the population, notwithstanding our reliance on technology, is not really aware of how serious a data breach may be insofar as it relates to them. Until it actually happens to you, for example, that your bank details or your credit card details are stolen, it's very impersonal. But when you realize that they can actually be stolen, when someone has access to your birthday, someone has access to your mother's maiden name, or other typical bank security questions, then you realize, oh, stuff like this is really important. I shouldn't just be telling this to anyone who asks for it. I think going back to the human resource example that I gave, when we take a look at that single data stream, and it's a very basic data stream, a simple instruction within the company to persons handling resumes, to not let anyone outside the HR department have access to these documents, for example, to only ensure that an applicant for a finance position, his papers will only go to the finance department, it will not go to sales, it will not go to marketing. Things like this, from the practical perspective, they already serve to secure the data in such a large way, since you're already doing one aspect, which is a need to know. Finance has every reason to know the information of this applicant who is applying for a finance position. But sales, marketing, legal would have no reason as yet, until he is hired maybe, to know what this person's data is. So something as simple as limiting access to a single piece of paper is actually already compliance with the Data Privacy Act. That's already in the pursuant to the mandate of the Data Privacy Act. So you can imagine that's just one data stream in a company, and you have a whole lot more in larger companies, particularly BPOs. You're receiving information of customers of your clients. You're receiving applicants of your own. You have your sales data. You have your supplier data with you. There's just a whole lot of it out there that we routinely take, we routinely give away, that we are not aware is actually quite important to keep confidential.
And I suppose the, you know, the value of this Data Privacy Act is that it sort of establishes the importance and value of this data, and it's you know, creating an environment where people are now putting an appropriate value and working harder to secure it and create processes that do secure it. And you know, a lot of this applies to the processes that businesses apply to their own operations. But also, is it true that the Act equally applies to individual people and employees of a business? So if, for example, you know, someone was inclined to steal data, the law has a bigger reach to the individual as well as the company.
Yes. While for the most part, you would be dealing with entities in terms of data privacy compliance, of course, that does not mean that specific individuals would not be liable under this law for being responsible primarily or being solely responsible for a data breach, or worse, actually not just being responsible for the breach, but taking the information themselves and not just being responsible through negligence. So yes, there are liabilities in place. The persons who steal the information are penalized under the Data Privacy Act. You have liability on the part of the information collector. For instance, you're collecting data for the purpose of marketing, and you use it for some other purpose, that would be a violation on the part of the entity. On the part of accessing, so if you have no business accessing that data and you hack into a system, you take that data, that is penalized under our laws. So it's not exclusively addressed towards entities that are collecting data. It's really a holistic approach to data privacy.
To zoom out a little bit and give, you know, the audience a little bit of assurance, the Philippines has been dealing with data now, you know, in the context of BPO and offshore for nearly 30 years. And it's been dealing with very sensitive data, you know, from some of the world's biggest companies and a lot of American companies that, of course, have very strong laws and regulations and protocols. And the industry has grown up with all of these protocols in place. So it is actually, you know, I would suggest, incredibly advanced in managing data privacy processes to manage that and keep it secure. And, you know, a lot of the multinational companies have all their back offices here, and you'd be surprised the amount of health data, financial data, personal data that is managed in the Philippines. So I assume, you know, the Data Privacy Act has only just come in, and I think it's largely in response to the sort of internet and how data can be so freely moved. But would you suggest that the Philippines is pretty on top of things in terms of processes, protocols, or not, maybe not the Philippines, the Philippine outsourcing industry is on top of things in terms of management of data security?
Yeah, I would say that the industry is on top of it. When the implementing rules came out in 2016, there was actually a rush to register the information systems of these BPOs. The National Privacy Commission actually targeted the industry as one of the first industries that was required to immediately submit their compliance along with healthcare and you mentioned banks as well. And these were some of the few institutions that were named that immediately had to comply. So I would say, while the law is relatively young, 4 years, the implementation insofar as the BPO industry is concerned is actually one of the more robust in terms of the local situations concerned, since the MPC was able to immediately recognize that it is a critical industry insofar as data privacy compliance.
And it works both ways, isn't it? The industry always wants to be on the right side of the compliance and processes, I imagine.
Yes. There was, like I mentioned, there was a general rush to comply. It was not a situation where the industry was quick to complain on implementation. So I do believe that the industry itself recognizes that data privacy is as essential to them as an industry. The implementation of the law is as essential to the industry as it is to the government.
BPOs and the outsourcing industry, for three decades now, they have been creating very secure environments and processes. And if anyone's had a walk around a BPO, they can be highly, highly secure areas depending on the data that's being managed. People, have to put all their stuff in lockers. There's no phones allowed. There's no USB ports on the computers. They're checked before they go in and out of offices. So all of these processes are in place to manage data securely where needed. Then the coronavirus happened.
Yes.
And 90% of the workforce quickly had to be dispatched home. How has that affected security practices and also security, data security in reference to the law?
Yeah. Well, the COVID pandemic really, I wouldn't say it threw a wrench into the industry as a whole, but it really made everyone, whether part of the BPO industry or not, rethink and revisit their policies in terms of data privacy. One thing that I think we should all be aware of before we discuss further insofar as COVID is concerned is that the government implemented several stages of quarantine here in the Philippines, with the ECQ or enhanced community quarantine being the strictest. Notwithstanding the implementation of the ECQ, BPOs actually were still allowed to operate as normal. Of course, this was highly dependent as well on individual companies, whether they were comfortable with a business as usual approach or allow a work from home arrangement or any other alternative working arrangement that was recognized by law. The National Privacy Commission, again, was quite quick to recognize that a work from home arrangement would present additional challenges to companies. So we had the first quarantines in the Philippines mid-March. By around May, if I recall correctly, we were slowly allowing companies to reopen. Of course, by reopening, it wasn't necessarily going into work, since there were industries, our industry, for example, the legal industry, was only allowed a certain percentage of workers in the office. This meant that sometime in May, there was a greater adoption of a hybrid situation where you have work being done at the office and work from home arrangements together. So around that time as well, the National Privacy Commission was quick to issue a bulletin offering guidance on what could be best practices in protecting personal data where the companies are under a work from home arrangement. A lot of it is practical, not really a legal approach to things, but more a practical approach. And I think that it was quite good that the National Privacy Commission was able to address this, in as much as it was actively promoting still the continuity of business, but keeping in mind awareness of possible breaches that smaller companies or entities that have may have not considered the increased risks would be aware of.
Right. And so in terms of practical takeaways, the law is quite clear, and also it provides quite a lot of guidance. And also it's quite universal. If a client actually felt that there might have been a breach of security, are they also equally compelled to immediately declare it?
Yes. Okay, you have the PICs and the PIPs once again. The primary responsibility belongs to the PIC, the entity that collected the data. The PIP, the third party to whom the processing was outsourced, would have the obligation to notify the PIC, and the PIC in turn would have the obligation to notify the National Privacy Commission of a possible breach. The period provided under the Data Privacy Act is 72 hours from the time that the breach was discovered. So it's quite strict. And of course, as part of having a data privacy compliance mechanism in place, these companies should also have their breach protocols in place as well. And the discovery or suspicion that the breach occurred should trigger these breach protocols to immediately go into action.
Fantastic. It's clear as day, Walter. Thank you so much. And is there anything else that you think that people should be aware of in terms of the data? Do you think that it's a system that's responded well to the needs of the modern workforce and technology as it evolves?
I think it is quite responsive. Insofar as the Data Privacy Act itself, one takeaway that I think the listeners should have is that this is, as our discussion would have shown, this is not a purely legal matter, and quite a lot of it is practical. Any layperson that would be so minded, for whatever reason, to take a look at the law and to read the law, would quickly realize that it is there to protect us. It's there to protect us, but at the same time, that we should be aware as well of the risks that we are being protected from. Because I think that's something that we as individuals who grow up using phones, using the internet, regularly give data away to social media sites, that we should be aware that there's a lot of money that people make out of our data, and we should be very careful to whom it is disclosed.
Yes, I think that's that's kind of a growing movement in society now, isn't it? That yes. Actually we're not completely in control of our identity and data, and I think as this law does, it brings greater awareness to the importance and value of all of this. So
yeah, that's right. I think something that we could leave with the listeners as well, Derek, is that in a local setting, the Philippines setting, much has been made of how the COVID pandemic was utilized by certain individuals or was relied upon by certain individuals as a means to avoid their obligations under a contract or under law, citing it as force majeure. However, from the framework of data privacy, I don't believe that this is something that data privacy practitioners, data protection officers of companies should think that they can latch onto as an excuse to avoid their obligations. There are, of course, additional challenges in a work from home situation, which could make possible breaches more likely, but it does not mean that the companies, the corporations, the data protection officers are totally excused from complying with the law during this time. The Data Privacy Act is very well armed in order to secure personal data and other corporate data that it is intended to protect, even during a situation such as this, where people are working from home, people are accessing data remotely, or people are even taking out physical copies of these data with them and bringing them home altogether.
Good. Yeah, that's good clarification. There is no excuse, it seems. Just, I suppose, one final question. I don't know if this is going too lowbrow, but, you know, I have my entire company's data with me at all times, effectively, in my laptop. And much of the world now, maybe not, you know, all Philippine companies, there's still paper in and around Philippine companies, but most, certainly my company, for example, is completely paperless. All of the data, though, is accessible on my laptop. But if I treat the passwords, you know, securely and prevent any breach of that, is it in effect, a completely closed system and I'm completely safe? If, you know, for example, if I don't share any of that data with people that shouldn't be given access to it, and there's proper policies around who you share it with, is that sort of safe enough, sort of relying on the encryption of Google, for example?
Yeah, I would say that we are only as safe as the technology would allow us to be, especially when everything is already in soft form, in our computers, in our phones. So the Data Privacy Act does not expect us to be able to fully negate all threats. I don't think that's the role of the Data Privacy Act. What it requires is that we be up to date and that the security systems that are in place to protect the data are up to date. Of course, we know that it's a never-ending game of cat and mouse between hackers and security experts when it comes to technology. So insofar as securing your data, I would say that making sure that your passwords are safe, you're not giving them off to anyone who would have no business accessing the files, your reliance on whether it's cloud encryption, you mentioned that you're in Google, whether it's Amazon, Microsoft, or wherever else you're storing the data online, that is actually in compliance with the Data Privacy Act, that you have these systems in place that are meant to protect the data and to prevent a breach or a malicious attack on the data. So that I would say that is compliant with the Data Privacy Act of the Philippines, insofar as protection is concerned.
Fantastic. So, Walter, thank you so much for your time. I encourage anyone and everyone to reach out to Walter if they have any concerns. And of course, if they want to know more about building secure processes, if anyone wants to get in touch, Walter, or know more, how can they do that?
Okay, you can visit our firm's website, and you can also email me at fnslaw.com.ph, sorry. So there are our contact details are there, and you can reach out to me or any of my partners in the firm for whether data privacy or other related concerns.
Fantastic. And I'll have all of that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Walter.
Thank you, Derek, for having me.
That was Walter Robin Goh. He is a partner at Fortin, Navassa, and Salazar. As always, if you want any of the show notes or any contact details, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And if you want to ask us anything, just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.